Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Merloni and Fourier.
And he goes for 11 catches in your face. Like right in your fosh. Like seriously, right in your fosh. You tell me Bill does
fosh
face.
Is that a baseball thing?
Right in your fosh.
Fosh?
The end of the Patriots season still leaves us with questions.
What about the own free agents on this football team?
Full stop.
Hey, can we do that? I feel like we should do that.
Full stop.
Why don't you say full stop?
You've already said it.
For instance, who exactly is running the defense?
You have Bill Belichick. You have his son, Steve Belichick. You have Gerard Mayo. Then there's Matt Patricia with the cans on. Who's in charge over there?
It's Lou.
Gordy, that you asked me that question because you know the exactly answer.
Yeah, I do. I just thought I'd like to hear you.
It's Christian.
Hey. What's up, everybody? It's Fourier, full stop.
It's Merloni and Fourier on WEEI.
We should just end there.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Hey, what do you say, Fourier?
Hello, Lou. How are you today,
good.
Brother? Full stop. Put your mic sock on so your germs don't get all over the microphone.
I know. Mutt sprays like a maniac. I come in. You never see Mutt, like, after our show? Does he, like, hide somewhere? I stuck around for like 5 minutes after I finally saw him spray everything down, wipe everything down.
Let me ask you a question. Can you actually tell the difference? Okay, mic sock on, close your eyes. Mic sock on or mic sock off? Okay, keep them close. Ready?
Okay.
La, 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 la. Tell me when you think the mic sock goes on. Blah, 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 blah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Start saying some P's, though. Isn't that what this is all about?
Your T's, your S's.
Is that what it's for?
Yeah. The hard
consonants. Have you ever actually looked at after you take the mic sock off, the dirt and crud that
don't
exists?
Do that. No, like, don't look
you,
at
we, you think
who's
COVID
that
is
I can't
an
blame
issue?
Anybody. Who's that?
That's from Greg Hill's breakfast.
Oh, yeah. You have the worst mic.
Greg
will put his hand in his pants inside his armpit. He'll eat, and then he holds the mic like Tim Benz used to hold it. This is what we should have done for the bet. Instead of, like, dressing up like, you know, Borat.
Lick the mic?
Lick the microphone.
Steve's is vibing.
I'll tell you what. I don't know. That's the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Whatever you do, do not shake the keyboards in there because they are full of crumbs. It is so disgusting.
Isn't it, though?
You might puke upon arrival.
I feel like we should all have our own keyboard also. Our own mic sock and our own keyboard.
Please. I'm having trouble with the damn mic sock, for God's sake.
Stop touching it. You need to sterilize your hands more than anybody.
I'm out. I already got the vid. I mean, whatever. What worse can happen to me? I'm good. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. What? Yeah, hanging out where Greg Hill hangs out? Yeah. No question about it. Oh, my God. It's like Thursday, and I still feel like we're looking at this freaking football team, you know, who lost on Saturday trying to figure out what the hell went wrong this year. And this is kind of, and I told you, this is what's going to happen.
What do you mean you told us?
This is what's going to happen.
What? That people wouldn't let it go? That would just be forced to kind of, even if you presented hardcore physical evidence, stats, information, people would still say, no, that ain't it.
No, all I'm saying is that when you see a collapse the way you saw from this team the last 5 weeks and then took a final test on Saturday night to see where it all led to, it was like astonishing. It was like surprising. It was just embarrassing. It was everything. To the point where people aren't going to stop. Like, it's got to get to the bottom of it. I got to know what happened during the bye. I got to know what happened down there during the week of practice. Like, I got to know why Malcolm Butler didn't play. Like, there's things you got to know, right?
I don't think you're going to find... Actually, I feel like this is actually easier than Malcolm Butler. Like, figuring out what happened at the bye week, figuring out what happened in that game on Saturday night. I feel like the farther we get away from it... I think the more
Malcolm Butler's
that we
like
get.
JFK. I mean, yeah. That's it. That
nobody's saying anything.
No one's saying anything. I'll never buy any story unless it's like really salacious.
I want to hear him say, they told me I wasn't playing because of this.
I fought somebody.
Yeah. I came home late. I missed curfew.
Bang something.
I eyeballed somebody longer than I should have, and I wouldn't avert my eyes.
Whatever. All we know is this. Because for the last 3 days, it's defense. Defense fell apart. And again, you lost a playoff game, and no one's really talking about the rookie quarterback. No one's really talking about it. No, from day one, from starting on Monday, it's all been about the defense, which takes us to Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He writes, who does what in this Patriots coaching staff and why? And he just starts tying into the whole coaching situation, the defense, lack of maybe a defensive coordinator, maybe lack of a voice. You know, he says the way they lost those games, talk about the last 5 weeks, the pattern each season followed, because he talks about the last 3 years, this team hasn't played well down the stretch, suggests that the students, who are the players, aren't ready for the end-of-year tests. And that would go back to the teachers, therefore the coaches. It's not hearsay to question someone who's arguably the greatest coach in the history of American professional sports. Hell, Bill Belichick himself invites it after games when he says we are out-coached and we need to coach better. So he just sort of kind of keeps going down, you know, as far as this coaching staff and what is going on with this coaching staff. It finally gets to who's in charge over there. That's an obvious question to ask, especially given how they played down the stretch. He said it's always been overseen by Bill Belichick. He makes the tweaks. He gets into Gerard Mayo. He says that he has a leading role in the defense, and as well, sources have indicated to him that are more significant than Steve's in directing the defense. He says, meanwhile, former defensive coordinator Matt Patricia returned to Foxborough this offseason, has his hands in the defensive soup as well, including on game day. Last quote, when there's so much ambiguity, how can there be any accountability? A league source said to me.
Wow. This is probably one of his best articles I've read in a long time.
It is fantastic.
And you only mentioned one aspect of it, because there's another one that we'll get to. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, having one person in charge is important. Or at least I would say, the team and the players need to know, at least, you know, from the smallest degree, when in doubt, who am I talking
who's
to?
Who's in charge?
With the Patriots, sometimes it's weird because, you know, they don't give everybody titles. You have to earn the title. But I would say I need some structure.
When Flores was here, did those guys know who the defensive coordinator was?
Yes, they did.
When Matt Patricia was here, did they know?
Yes, they did. Okay. Before he had the title.
Okay. Do they know now?
No, I don't think there's a chance they know who really is in charge. No.
No, they don't. And he gets into
especially since Patricia came back.
He says, Patricia, he's involved in it as well, including game day. So I don't know how it works in an NFL locker room, okay? But, you know, because I've heard that, you know, on any given day, there could be four voices addressing the defense in a meeting, whether it's Patricia, whether it's Steve Belichick, whether it's Bill Belichick, whether it's Gerard Mayo. And on game day, there could be a different voice, you know, before you go out in the field talking to this defense. And I get that, probably all on the same page. But does that work? Okay, they don't have a defensive coordinator. They've done that before. They didn't put a label on. But there's a difference between not labeling Brian Flores as a defensive coordinator and every single man on that defense knowing he's a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that's leading it.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Josh McDaniels is leading that offense. How big of a deal is it? You had a situation
that.
Yeah. Was your third year in the league?
No. I mean, not third year. You know, after Charlie Weiss obviously took the job with Notre Dame. So he became their head coach.
Yeah.
And I remember there was nobody had the title.
So he leaves and is really.
Yeah. So, but Dante Scarnecchia basically led our offensive meetings, but he was the assistant head coach. So even if Bill was out, he would address the entire team. So that in a sense was kind of obvious. Okay. But Dante was the offensive line coach. Dante was in charge of, first and second down runs install. He was in charge of red zone. He was in charge of short yardage and goal line. So he would all, even with an offensive coordinator, he would speak to the offense. And then it was Ivan Fears. He would always speak to the offense on that first Wednesday, and he would discuss blitz pickup, percentages, who to look out for. Somebody else, Josh McDaniels, Charlie would install the passing game. So every assistant coach had a job. And they would address the team because you had to delegate all the chores. It was too much for one person. But when Charlie left, that still happened. But it was still just who is actually calling the plays? We actually had conversations about this. Who is actually calling the plays? Who do we report to? Like, there was a lot of turnover that year. Like, the tight ends coach left, Charlie left.
Was it a problem? Like, when you guys would say that, listen, would you say it like who's running this? Or would you be like, man, who the hell? There's two different ways to say it. Like, who the hell's running this?
Well, see, here's the difference. Tom was there. See, that's correct. The biggest difference. So, if what I started doing is I would...
Who's in charge? Tom's like, I am.
Well, when it came to an offensive issue, it was like
I'm
Josh was, I think, and I still to this point don't even have a clear answer, but I think everyone believes that Josh was calling the offense.
You didn't even know?
No, I never really knew who was in charge, okay? I actually thought, I didn't think Ivan was calling plays because Ivan never called plays. Like, Jeff Davidson, who was the offensive line coach at the time, he left. He was actually the guy when coaches were getting opportunities to call plays in preseason games, he was the next guy up. Well, he leaves. So Jeff leaves. He becomes the offensive coordinator at Carolina. Okay, Charlie leaves. Ivan stays. Dante stays. Brian Daboll was still there. So you had young coaches, but none of them had any experience actually calling plays in an NFL game. So, yes, we would sit there in the offensive meeting room and go, who is in charge?
Mm.
Okay, but in the end, if we had a question, we went to Tom. If we had a concern, we went to Tom. If there was misinformation on checks, on play calling and adjustments, we went to Tom.
So isn't that played by the role of Dante Hightower, of Devin McCourty? I mean, you've got some Patriots. I mean, these guys are Pats. You know, we're talking about, you know, like guys, like glue. You got a couple of them. I mean, they're not Tom Brady. But defensively, with what Hightower and McCourty been around, don't you have those guys there as well?
The difference between McCourty and Brady is I don't think that McCourty has a clear understanding of what the defensive line is doing. Like, Brady knows what everybody's job is.
Christian tells me he's open. You know, he's open.
Right. He knows what the offensive linemen are doing. He knows the why. You know, now maybe McCourty does in a similar fashion regarding the defense, but it's different when the quarterback knows more than everybody else in the room. So, and for the record, we've been running these plays for 4 years. We really don't need a ton of assistance. Just call the plays. But when we started getting different information as far as why we were doing it or how we were doing it from coaches, like after my position coach left, same position coach that Wiggy had, okay, as a tight end, they brought this other dude in who was telling us to do stuff that we had never done before. We were like, well, we don't do it that way. And he was yelling and screaming and like, oh, my God, it was a nightmare. So you need structure. There needs to be an identifiable adult in the room that's saying, when all hell breaks loose, like, this person has the final say. Well, it's a group thing. You know, we collaborate together. No. So who is actually in charge? Like, if the world was going to blow up right now, who is making the final decision? Like, I need to know who that is. But maybe it's Bill. Like, is it Gerard Mayo? Is it Matt Patricia? Well, who is it?
Well, yeah, because you talk about, like you said, we were together for 3 years, right, at that point. And you had Tom Brady, the ultimate leader, you know, of an offense who knows everyone's jobs. And this year, you look at this team and there's a lot of new faces. Now, I know Ben Volen, which we'll get to, you know, talking about this football team and some of the reasons why their future, he writes, might not be that rosy. Because they had the second oldest defense by age. So you would think, well, it's an old veteran defense.
Should be easy.
It should be like your offense.
It should be.
So
hey,
we don't need
guys,
a voice.
Hey, listen, just make sure they show up to meetings on time.
Right, but it's not that simple, right? Because, you know, Judon, Godshall, Barmore, you know, all new faces. You know, you brought some guys back in Jamie Collins and Van Noy, still understanding some things. Maybe things are different. You know, you look at your secondary crew and Jones goes down and it's just basically JC and you know, Devin McCourty. Got some young players there. New players there. You know, Jalen Mills or Miles Bryan or Kyle Duggar, year two. So it might have been the second oldest defense, which kind of shocked me to hear this from Ben Volen, but I'm guessing it's true, to be that disconnected.
It's not surprising to me because, see, the transition for even if you go all the way back to, like, Dean Pease and, you know, then he left and then it was like a gap and then it was obviously it was Matt Patricia. But Brian Flores had been there since, like, 2001. He'd been there forever. So there was a natural progression. I'm sure everybody was psyched. And remember, even was it Gerard Mayo? No, not Gerard Mayo. Sorry. It was Hightower, like, talking about, like, obviously identifying that there was a difference between who was calling and running the defense. Hey, listen, Brian simplified our defense.
Yes.
So you knew that he was a defensive coordinator.
Yes.
It was pretty freaking easy.
Yes.
right? And there was no ambiguity whatsoever.
Yeah. So this is kind of where we're at right now, and it's questioning the defense. And a lot of people are starting to look at the coaching on this football team. And like he mentions, you know, Tommy Carr in his article, Bill Belichick's one of the greatest defensive minds in the game, the greatest coaches in the game. But he continues to point out, we'll go through it a little bit more, all the mistakes that this team made throughout the season. And we said it before. We said it like week two, week three, week four. Andy Hart said it with us. And by the way, Andy will join us at 3 o'clock. Last week, it's one of the poorly coached football team we've seen under Bill Belichick. And he's absolutely right. And finally, I'll leave you with this. This is what else he writes. Patriots staff is, for the most part, young as hell. Brought up almost entirely through the Patriots system and arrived in Foxborough because of someone they know. Which is so true. We talk about nepotism. We constant so much about Brian and Steve Belichick. Boy, when you look at this staff, and I know it's an issue around the league, but with this staff, whew, we looked into a few of these guys, how they got their jobs. We'll do it next.
All I heard was blah, 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 Matt Ryan, blah, 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 mobility.
Yeah, well, listen, we'll get into some of those names on this list when we get back.
Oh, what a talker.
Green pitching coaching staff, I should say. Ben Vaughn, what's his name? Andy Hart. He'll join us at 3 o'clock. All right, it's Maloney and Forey.
Your home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by Cars for Kids. The easy way to donate your car. You can donate today and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Go to carsforkids.com or give them a call at 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS.
Lou Maloney, we have some breaking Red Sox and Major League Baseball news. Former Red Sox outfielder Ruzney Castillo attempting a comeback. He has signed a minor league deal with the Washington Nationals. He's now 34 years old. And, of course, if you forgot, 7 years, $72 million contract with the Red Sox back in 2014.
Listen, I think he could play. He just never would come up because of his contract. But I think he can play. Gets out of that weird contract, someone's going to give him a shot. We'll see what he can do.
I thought you were going to say that, you know, David Ortiz was on this show and said that Dan Shaughnessy is an a-hole.
Well, that the lockout is over.
Yeah, no outlets actually picked that up, Christian. It didn't actually happen.
The lockout's not over.
The New York Post said it did.
Nick Foligno.
Our favorite newspaper.
They love us.
Who loves us more than the Post?
Nobody.
The Post loves this show.
Right, thank you, Ryan.
We should move the show to New York.
Nick Foligno expected to return tonight. Bruins hosting the Capitals. Linus Olmark gets a start tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Oscar Steen will be the healthy scratch with Foligno returning. The Tampa Bay Rays' proposed plan to split seasons up in Montreal has been shot down by the Major League Baseball officials. Rays officials will now be seeking a full-time home in the Tampa Bay area as the lease agreement at Tropicana Field expires after the 2027 season. And some weird news out of Kansas City as linebacker of the Chiefs, Willie Gay, has been charged with a misdemeanor criminal damage to property after he broke a vacuum and other items during an argument with the mother of his son. And finally, Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving fined $25,000 for directing obscene language towards a Cavaliers fan on Monday night. Maloney and Fourier is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified. Yes, Christian Fourier.
Well, that's not the same dude that, like, got in a fight and ran around naked, right? And they had to strap him down. Is that the same guy?
No, it's a different guy.
Okay.
Different guy. That was Malik McDowell of the Browns.
So I knew you would know that.
Bad day for NFL, bad week for the NFL in arrest. Maloney and Fourier is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. I'm Tyler Devitt on your home for Red Sox baseball, WEI.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey. podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Fourier on WEEI.
How many uncharacteristic mistakes have the Patriots made today?
We'll start. Offense, number 85. Holding. Offense, number 81. Holding. Offense. We'll start. Offense, number 49. Holding. Receiving team, number 50. Free kick. Out of bounds on the kicking team.
This has got to just drive Bill Belichick crazy. You just don't expect these type of mistakes.
Oh, disastrous play to begin the half, and Malcolm Jenkins is going to cruise home for a pick six. All pressure and it's blocked. Pressure in the backfield. Winston launches a dangerous run. Callaway came down with it.
He told me. He said, what did he say?
So we put that together after week three.
After the New Orleans game.
And we sat here early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Goodell coached. Oh, you're crazy. He's the greatest of all time. Yeah, he is. Greatest of all time. But let's look at one game. That's all he can do. No, one game. Outcoached. You know, and his team wasn't ready to play. You know, we brought it up before. Tommy Curran gets more into it, right? He talks about 17 false starts.
Yep.
Penalties. 9 delayed games and 6 encroachment neutral zone infraction penalties. They rank 11th, 29th, and 30th, basically in those categories. Mm-hmm. You know, he talks about flat starts, beginning of the games, coming out at halftime. Wide receivers ending up next to each other at the end of routes. Then he starts looking pre-season at individual stuff. Games. I mean, he can go through it. The Dolphins, opening drive in both halves, week 1 and week 18. They also threw a pick 6 in their first drive in week 18 to dig a 14-0 hole. The Houston Texans scored 3 touchdowns and a field goal in their first 4 possessions.
That, to me, may be the one that stands out the most, because it took you how long to figure it out? Like, how long did it take you to realize that, to break down the Davis Mills code? Like, he's such a savant. It took you that long to break it down. You couldn't figure it out.
Everybody
they kept
scored.
Scoring.
Everybody scored on you. It seemed like, you know, in these games that went south, everybody scored on you. Hell, even that Cleveland game, you blew him out on the first drive. And then things, a lot of times, he brings up the Colts game, didn't go well at the end of halves. They either punted because they didn't want to push it, or trailing 17-0, they throw an interception in the red zone like Mac Jones did. And then you come out in halftime, and how many times did they turn the ball over? New Orleans was a pick 6.
Yep.
Indy was an interception.
Yep.
Tampa was a fumble. Like, how many games you come out at halftime turning the ball over? I think one game they came out in the very first play was a false start by Isaiah Wynn. The very first play of the second half, you're like, what in God's name is going on?
Yeah.
It was a poorly coached football team.
And to me, this is the biggest indictment, because this, and I've said it a million times, if this was any other team that we were bitching and complaining about for losing in stupid ways, you would look to all these things and you say, these guys aren't listening to their coaches.
No.
You know, you talked about a throwing interception coming out of halftime against Tampa, and then they fumbled out of halftime. I mean, so, like, there's just so many. He calls it a rap sheet. Yes, they're guilty. I feel like there's, at some point in time, you have to just admit that the message was not getting through, because I have a hard time believing any of these guys are dumb. I think that the backs figured it out.
I think it was Bill Parcells said the message isn't getting through to your players. It's coaching. Period.
I've always been told the same thing. Like, poorly, like, you know, stupid players, like, you know, smart players who act stupid during a game or do stupid things, it's because of the coaching. Like, dumb players are poorly coached. Is it okay to say that? And here's the other thing. Can a guy have a bad year? Yes. Sure as hell can. Like, I think he's earned it, you know. But this, to me, was about as bad as it gets. And there's so many examples. I really feel like you forget about it. Like, Ryan had to remind me that we actually, you know, put this together after that New Orleans game, because it was so bad.
Yeah, Bad News Bears.
And then you remember how that game ended? Like, a 75-yard drive that took up, like, almost 7 minutes of clock time. And then they scored a touchdown. Taysom Hill scored a touchdown. And then basically, even after Mac Jones drove you down there to score, you're like, all right, let's get the ball back. And you couldn't get it back because the defense, they kept running all over
you. I think it's coaching. And before people lose their minds, not necessarily Bill. I mean, he is responsible, right? He is the head coach. I mean, but, you know, Tommy Curran goes on talking about on offense. Running back coach, Vinny Sinceri. Tight end fullback coach, Nick Cayley. Offensive line coach, Carmen Brasillo. Wide receiver coach, Mick Lombardi. And quarterback coach, Bo Hargrey. They have 11 total seasons working with the Patriots. Five of them come from Cayley. So the other five coaches have been here for a total of 6 years. Like, to me, this is a serious problem. Like, and don't say, well, that's what happens. You lose a lot of coaches. They've done it. The entire time Bill is here, they've lost coordinators. They've lost position coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
They've done it. Now, you could argue the last 3 or 4 years, it's maybe not at that rate. And this is the problem. The last 3 or 4 years, number one, you have sucked in the draft. And number two, you've lost good coaches and replaced them with FOBs. Friends of Bill.
Or what we like to call
Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill. Daddy, I'm working with Uncle Bill. Well, there's no better way to learn football, son, than working with Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
He will teach you the ropes.
Yeah.
Go work with Uncle Bill.
Well, because it's funny, because all these guys are like, they were so young, like their dads or, you know, Mike Lombardi or Al Groh, all these kids, like Vinny Sinceri, whose dad, they're all like friends of Bill when they were younger. Like, so they're in and out, they're a part of the family, they're hanging out, you're doing the cookouts, and I can just see like, well, mother, I'll tell you what, it's time to send little Billy down to go get right with Uncle Bill. You know if he can get through the year, Bill will make him a man. Maybe a position coach.
It's like sending him to Yellowstone, like branding him. You know what I mean? Look at it. I mean, seriously, we all know. We talk so much about Steve Belichick and Brian Belichick. You mentioned it, Vinny Sinceri.
Well, Uncle Bill will get Sinceri right there.
See, that's the thing. Some of these guys don't even know. Sal Sinceri? I don't know who he is.
So, no, hold on. That stood FOB out to me because Vinny Sinceri was a defensive backs defensive back at Alabama. Early on, like when Alabama's first, like, you know, national championship, one of the first or second ones that.
Vinny or Sal?
Vinny's Sal's coach, son.
Yeah.
But Sal's been a long college coach for years and years, FOB. So Vinny would look to Bill as Uncle Bill.
So Sal's saying,
Uncle
Vinny,
Bill, if I work 23 out of the 24 hours, can I be a defensive back coach? No, we'll make you tight ends coach.
So we know.
I mean, played tight end.
Matt Groh's in the organization, right? Son of former Pats assistant Al Groh. You know, so is Al
that's their close. They've been together since the Jets did. Yeah. They've been around forever.
Don't worry, Matt. You know, Uncle Bill, take care of you.
Uncle Bill, get him right. He got arrested again. Well, I tell you what, it's time to send him to Yellowstone. Bill will fix him.
We don't need to talk about Mick Lombardi, right? With Mike.
We know that.
Yeah, we already know that one. How about Nick Cayley? John Carroll. Like, there's a couple of schools. John Hopkins and John Carroll are all over the place. So, John Carroll alum, just like Brad Ziegler. Just like Josh McDaniels.
Dave Ziegler.
I'm sorry, Dave Ziegler. God, I keep calling him Brad. It's my boy. Dave Ziegler, Josh McDaniels, Nick Caserio, Jerry Schaplinski. Remember him? Former Pats assistant. Remember when they hired him? We were like, where's he come from?
John Carroll.
John Carroll. So all like, you know, friends with everybody, right? Maybe friends with Josh McDaniels and Ziegler. I don't know. Caserio, whatever it is, right? How about Mike Pellegrino? Mike Pellegrino, the cornerback coach. His dad apparently is good friends with Bill Belichick. He coached at John Hopkins. Dave Pietramala, whatever, close friends with Bill Belichick. He's the head coach over there. And we know John Hopkins, the ties over there. But Pellegrino, that one's an interesting one. He's been a cornerback coach now for 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was an assistant coach on this team while playing professional lacrosse. Two years, he was an assistant coach while playing professional lacrosse.
He wasn't like a real assistant coach.
I love lacrosse.
But then he jumped in as the cornerbacks coach for the next three years.
He paid
lacrosse
his dues.
Is a sport you like to practice.
He went from a special assistant coach, whatever, playing professional lacrosse at the same time, and it's like, hey, let me know when my career's over. Good, I'll make you the corner coach. You can coach the corners. And I guarantee somewhere on his bio it says that he coached Steph Gilmore, who was defensive player of the year. I'll guarantee you that, right? I mean, Dave Ziegler, de facto GM, former college teammate of Josh McDaniels, Nick Caserio. Once again, John Carroll University.
Does John Carroll University have like a satellite coaching, like, you know, diploma?
I don't even know about this. Dave Ziegler, I had no idea. But prior to joining the Broncos under Josh McDaniels.
Well, something back here just had Tyler cracking up. Tyler, what is
Patriots.com and Pellegrino's first season as quarterbacks coach in 2019, number one defense. Also, Stephon Gilmore turning a career season, becoming the first Patriot to win the AP Defensive Player of the Year award.
Wow. I mean, we don't have to.
I mean, that's some good coaching.
Yeah. Credit Mike Pellegrino.
That's right. Wow. I mean, Nick Caley's first year as a tight end coach, they credit him for the year Gronk had in 2017.
Right, listen, there's a lot of coaching going on.
Coach Rob Gronkowski had a career year. And it's like year one of these like star players who have already made it. These guys just sort of jump on it.
It is, for the record, though, this is what Bill likes to do. Like, he will always put a young coach, for the most of the time, he'll put a young coach starting coaching a new position with an older player. Because the older player really doesn't need much coaching. At least I've been in the league 8 years. I've been to the Pro Bowl. I've won Super Bowls. Like, just manage my time.
So is Nick Caley the reason why they haven't had a tight end since Gronk?
I mean, listen, they haven't had a good one.
Thing about Ziegler is kind of funny, too, because he was, prior to joining the Broncos under Josh McDaniels, so Josh brought him back in because they were like roommates at John Carroll. Woohoo! Buddy, buddy.
Hey, do you want to be a coach?
Yeah, he was a special teams coordinator and running back tight end coach at Chaparral High School in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah. It's a big school out there, though.
Huge lacrosse.
Yeah, big time, big
but
time.
He wasn't even an offensive or defensive coordinator at a high school level.
But here's the thing, though. Okay, I don't think that you necessarily have to play football to be a good pro football coach. Like, Lou Holtz never played, was not a football player. Like, Bill played in high school. Like, he wasn't very good at it, okay?
See, this is where it's so different than baseball. So different.
Which is interesting to me, though, I was going to bring up, is like, other than Gerard Mayo and Troy Brown, okay, how many of these guys actually played in the NFL? I'm not saying it's a prerequisite to be in the NFL. I'm just curious. Like, how many guys can I relate to? How many? Hell, my coach, I had some crappy coaches, and one of them was an offensive lineman. The other one was the quarterback's coach. The other guy was a former offensive line coach. But none of them were former tight ends. Like, none of them were tight ends. The best coach I ever had.
How was it, though?
But it was like, there was like, I get it. You played offensive line. I do believe there is a disconnect. I do, as far as the nuances of like certain plays. Now, there are some that are just great coaches. It doesn't matter. They could have been selling insurance. They're smart. They have a good way of like teaching, encouraging. If Tyler wanted to be a coach right now for Bill Belichick, first thing he needs to do is go enroll at John Carroll. Okay, go to John Carroll
or
University.
John Hopkins.
Or John Hopkins. Either one. Okay. Go there, and then just and I'll get you a tryout, Tyler. And what you'll do is, for the first year and a half, 2 years of your life, you won't have a life. You'll work 23 out of the 24 hours. You won't have any, you know, social life whatsoever, which is fine for you. Eventually, though, Tyler, you'll be a position coach.
So it's like a crash course.
It is. And that is, and credit to him for building that almost like this pipeline to the NFL.
I find it doesn't mean
that they're good.
So strange. Like you said, like, you don't have to be, you know, play a tight end to be a great coach at a tight end, right? Whatever. But like DeMarcus Covington, who's like the defensive line coach, I believe. Like, he was in the college ranks. He was a wide receiver at Samford. And like you said, he could teach offensive, but he's got to be taught offensive defensive line first. And then he's got to teach to defensive linemen. And you mentioned that disconnect. Like, do you have any former tight ends be your coach? Like, I would think that there's a disconnect, because when you're in the line of fire, when there's just certain things on the field that are going on, can you relate to that? If you were a wide receiver in high school and now you're coaching big bodies, defensive linemen?
It is funny. Like, there was, I've never had, in 13 years, I've never had a coach who played the position be my coach.
Was that
never
ever a problem?
No, because I was so, you know, unbelievably talented. I adjusted. I mean,
obviously.
Oh, wait, did I say that out loud? I just wanted to think it. No. It was, no. You listen. What are they going to do? They tell you where to line up, you know, blocking schemes. Oh, they're really good at it. Forget about, like, you know, I had so many coaches, they couldn't even throw the ball. Couldn't throw it.
See, that is so bizarre.
Could not throw the ball.
I think when you look around Major League Baseball, most all of them have played professional baseball. Like just first base coaches, third base coaches.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And as a player, I always liked it because they understood what was going through my mind. The only guy that never played professional ball, it was Dave Jouse, was a guy that I had. And he was one of the best coaches I've ever had. Like, period.
He's still in the league right
now. Yeah, one of the best coaches I've ever had. Actually, he threw BP. Who was that to?
Pete Alonso.
Matthew Alonso. Money. I don't know how old he is.
Every year.
You know, but just money BP. He knew pitching. He knew hitting. He knew infield. He knew catching. He knew everything. To the point when he first showed up, we were like, who the hell does this guy think he is? He thinks he knows everything. You know what? He did. He knew everything. But, like, I wouldn't be comfortable jumping into, like, you know, coaching in the Red Sox organization and be like, you got the outfielders. You know, or you're going to coach the pitchers. Like, we're not going to coach the pitchers. What the hell am I? I got to learn pitching first, like from that side of it. Like, catchers can be pitching coaches, I believe. But it's like, I got to learn the position first. Then I got to learn what that guy goes through within a game to be able to even teach him the adjustments within a game. I don't know how that works. It's a completely different world, well, baseball.
I would say, so Brian Daboll.
I don't want a pitcher teaching me how to hit.
It is interesting. Like, so you would say the majority of coaches in Major League Baseball are all former players?
Yeah, see, we have the benefit of minor league baseball.
So you can have a career
minor league baseball player that just knows the game.
So what if you're in college? What if you played in college? I mean, it's the same thing, technically, for the most part.
He's got a lot of these guys that never played football in college.
I know. It is interesting. But I still don't think there's a lot of guys I think it's hit and miss. I do. I believe it's hit and miss.
Well, now you got nerds with computers telling you how to
hit. Well, yeah. And if I walked in a room and some coach said the computer says to use this footwork and do this, I would drag him by his shirt and throw him out the room. Like, you're not doing me any favors, you know? Like, I remember the first time.
You just walk up and say, oh, is that simple?
Mark Favaro came into our meeting room one year, and he just sat. He it was like 2 days. He sat in our meeting room, watched film with us, and then he went outside and he watched all our drills. And it was the first time that I was like, you kind of looked at somebody and you don't have to say anything. You're just like, you know what you did, right? You know, or he says, here's what I would do. You know, this is what worked for me.
Right.
Okay.
How I got out of this or did that.
You know, and this, try this. It's not that the you can't be successful with a guy that never played in the league. Like, there's the league is filled with them, filled with guys that didn't play in the league, and they're great coaches. But right now, just looking at the stats and the rap sheet, as Curran calls it, it's obvious the arrow needs to point to the coaches.
I know. Well, yeah, it does.
Like, why? When I was with Seattle, Lou, we were one of the most penalized teams in the league.
It wasn't the coach's fault.
Holmgren fired all the coaches.
Oh yeah.
Nobody, you guys can't get through to them.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, why is it our fault? Just they're not listening to you.
And I just wonder, like, the disconnect. I'll never forget. We were like, Yankee Stadium. We had a rain delay, and it was when Kerrigan was like the head coach, you know, the manager, and he comes walking in. He's like, Clemens is pitching. Roger was pitching him out for the Yankees, and he sits there and he's like, guys, we've charted Roger's splits. 85% of them end up out of the zone, so let's lay off it tonight.
Oh, that'll help.
And like Val just like
okay.
Val just looked at him and was like, Joe. And he just turned his head. He's walking back to his office like, Joe. He's like, do you ever think that Roger's really good because it's hard to? Like, he throws 97, his split's 91, it drops a foot. Yeah. Of course it's a ball. It's why nobody can hit it, which is why he's one of the best pitchers in the game. And it was funny. Like, pitcher, leave the hitter's meeting. Like, just leave. Oh, okay, drops a foot at 91. Oh, the last minute, last 10 feet. Oh, yeah, I'll just lay off it. Why don't you tell me to lay off the slider out of the zone, too? Or not swing at a fastball at my chin? Why don't you tell me? Oh, okay. Whip out another freaking video program. Like, and tell me how to hit again. Like, and I just wonder, these guys are like, I don't know. Like, you're my corner coach. Good. What'd you do? I played lacrosse. Like, I just got off the pitch. Like, you know what I mean?
Soccer.
I was like a midfielder.
That's
whatever. Like, what are we doing?
What is that?
How are you going to help me cover freaking Steph Diggs?
I will say this, though. I think Josh McDaniels could probably, if he was not an offensive coordinator, could coach any position on the offense.
He might be. He's got some dirt in his
cleats. He's been there forever. He's seen everything.
Yeah.
So he's very well skilled at that. I would say Brian Daboll, same thing.
Tyler, what do you got?
So the Patriots tight end coach Nick Haley, in his Patriots.com bio, his first season as tight ends coach, Rob Gronkowski earned his fifth Pro Bowl invitation. By the way, Nick Haley, the tight ends coach, a John Carroll alum, never coached a single position besides secondary at the Division I AA level at Florida Atlantic in Eastern Illinois.
Mm.
He came to the Patriots and is now the tight ends coach, but they're crediting him for the Gronk fifth Pro Bowl season.
And you wonder why Dalton Keene and Devin Asiasi aren't working.
Amateurly coaching him.
Oh. Here's the thing. Do you think Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith played well? You think they blocked well? Did they make a bunch of mistakes?
Henry,
they all of them made a bunch of mistakes. But I would say Henry had one of his best years.
Mm-hmm.
Credit the coach to that, or just the fact that Henry's will probably succeed anywhere he goes. There are players that overcome their coaching. Let's not act like that's not a thing. Like, that's the number one rule any coach should tell you: overcome your coaching. Because most of them are limited in their knowledge and their technique and their ability to explain things to you.
All right, listen, so we Andy Hart, again, he's going to join us at 3 o'clock. We'll dive in with some Patriots, what to do. Maybe he can have some ideas on how to fix this thing. But I want to talk a little Celtics next because another disappointing loss last night where I didn't see any of those, like, green teamers saying, oh, I thought Jalen and Jason couldn't play together. I didn't see those tweets after that game. We'll talk Celtics. That's next.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is Maloney and Fourier.
The NFers.
On WEEI. Love them or hate them.
I hate you. I hate you. I don't even know you.
Your afternoon drive needs them.
And I hate your guts.
It's Maloney and Fourier on WEEI.
Even a two, Mike. Stop it at two. We're talking a ball. We're back in a ball game here.
Goes in with 10 o'clock. Shoot a poke now. Rozier takes it.
Oh! Drained! Unreal!
28 for Terry Rozier.
He is so clutch.
Martin, three on the clock. Ball game. Haywood with the rebound. And the Charlotte Hornets come into town and take the Celtics 111 to 102. They are one happy bunch. They came in thinking this is a big game, an important game, and it is and was, and they performed exceptionally well. Jason Tatum shaking his head as he walks off the court.
First win for the Hornets in this building since 2016, especially for a guy like Terry, a former Celtic. How good does this one feel?
It was great. You know, Terry and G, they came from the Celtics. You know, we haven't got them a win in this building in a minute, and I've never won here, so.
Did you already give a message to Terry after this win?
Yeah. We did this for you and Gordon.
Ooh. That was Miles Bridges after the game. He had a good game. Boy, he's a good young player, too.
Wish we had a guy like that. You know the guy? You know, we need a guy like Terry Rozier. and Gordon Hayward. That could be great.
That little sidestep three at the end, though, was a freaking dagger. And it was just the Celtics again. And this was a big game. Charlotte's a good team. 4 or 5 games over 500. You know, you had won 5 of 6. And it's just, you know, I don't know. Some people might look and say, ah, it's a blip in the radar. They've been playing real well lately. You know, Tatum and Brown have been playing real well together. And it's like, okay, but I don't feel like this team, like, if they were playing really good, if they were 12 games over 500, it's definitely a blip on the radar type thing. But it's just, you know, 2 for 18 from three.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they couldn't hit a three whatsoever. Like, they could have got that team in foul. They could have gotten to the line. I don't know, it was an 8-9 minutes to go in the game. They could have got to the line whenever they wanted. They just refused to take it to the hoop and kept missing threes. It was just another, just chalk it up as another frustrating loss for the Boston Celtics.
Let me read you something from January 6th, 2022. This is a quote from Ime Udoka after a loss, or a post-game message as far as what he told the team. Like, what was the message to the team? And he said, repetitive results, that's happening. Either we're going to make some adjustments and get tired of it, or it's going to keep happening. He said the message was short and sweet, but it wasn't about the last play again. It was everything leading up to it. So think about that. Repetitive results, that's what's happening. Either we're going to make some adjustments and get tired of it, or it's going to keep happening. What do you think has happened? Which one? You get two options. Repetitive, okay?
Or do you think
they've done anything about it?
I was starting to think it was turning. You know, maybe it's a blip. I don't know. I was just starting to think it was turning a little bit. You know, these guys are back healthy off COVID, whatever. Jalen's playing more. He's healthy. And it just felt like it was starting to turn a little bit. Last night helped it. So it happened. So I don't know if it's a blip. I have no idea. Portland, they should take care of. Washington's playing pretty good. They'll get Charlotte again in another couple of weeks. But for me, it's like, do we have Jalen Brown? I just want to hear Jalen Brown post game. talking about, you know, because, again, shooting the threes, it's not working. Adjustments needed to be made or not?
I think the easy answer is to try to get to the basket more, but this NBA don't really work like that. You got 7-footers down there. You got to make the right play. And we have guys, at times we try to be overly aggressive and get to the basket anyway, but sometimes that leads to turnovers and even worse basketball. So, you know, we got to keep taking the open shots. And I think sometimes we pass up looks at times, but, you know, for the most part, we got really good looks. I think they outplayed us tonight.
Yeah, so they did.
You
want evidence of that?
We probably need to go to the basket more, but, you know, it's not easy in this league when there's 7-footers. Mason Plumlee. Like, if Mason Plumlee
airballed a free throw last night.
Oh, that was, and it was like off to the right, too, wasn't it? Like, what even?
It was drafty.
But Mason Plumlee is 7-footer, okay, listed at 6'11", maybe 7 feet. Is he going to scare you from going to the hoop? Like, is that where we're at in this league right now? So, we don't have to go to the hoop against Philly then either, right, with Embiid? Like,
no.
So, but it's almost like this recognition of after the game, like, yeah, I mean, probably should have went, the easy answer, we should have went to the basket more. I would like for this team to identify that in, like, the first, second quarter or halftime and try to make these types of adjustments within a basketball game rather than afterwards saying, yeah, you know, we just didn't bring the energy, or we just, you know, didn't take it to the basket enough, or we forced some shots. Can there any kind of in-game recognition to kind of maybe take it to the hoop?
The NBA don't really work like that. You got seven footers down there. You got to make the right play.
So in this NBA, nobody takes it to the basket? I know we're shooting more threes, but that's it? 7-footer? Can't do it?
I don't think it's that simple. I don't think that's it. You know, the thing, I feel like every single time we talk Celtics, we talk the same. Like, it's like nothing ever changes. It's repetitive. It's over and over again. It's Groundhog Day. Like, if I could sit there and say, oh, it sounded like it had changed. Like, have they ever been three games above anything more than two games above 500? Like, how many games, what's the longest win streak?
I think it's three games this year.
That's the best they've had?
Couple stretches where they had two in a row, but I believe three is still the best.
I sit there and I look at it, even like the rebounding, when I look at the stats.
They got the two games over 500.
Just recently?
No, over 500. Well, yeah, I'm just saying December 1st against Philadelphia, two games over. But yeah, then, no, they didn't even recently. They were just one game over 500. They've been just sitting around 500.
And so, that three-game winning streak came against the Western Conference.
Yeah. And so, I know, listen, we're going to talk to Scal at 3:30. And watching this game.
Uh-oh, Scal.
I'm sitting there watching, like, LaMelo Ball, who's just, you know, kind of wacky, out of control, but fun to watch. Good player. A lot better than I thought he was going to be. I'm watching Miles Bridges, who's now in his third year in the league as well. And still somewhat, you know, young Terry Rozier. And it's like, you're no longer in this, like, unique class of having two good young players on your team. Now, you know, I would say Tatum is, you know, arguing with his career and what he's done this year. It's a dip, but, you know, he's better than those guys, I would say. But when you look around the league, you are no longer special. There's a lot of good young players in the league. There's a lot of teams that have one or two really good players that are 3 years in the league or 5 years in the league or 2 years in the league. There's a lot of that anymore.
You're no longer special.
They're in great shape because they have two good young players. There's a lot of teams with two really good young players. Yeah, right?
The specialty. I almost feel like Charlotte is who you used to be. Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, Bridges, Ball. Like, you got all these young players. It seems like you're on your way. He does. It feels like they kind of figured it out. Like, think, a good mix of veterans and young players.
Yeah, so a guy in the text line actually says, literally no one on earth is listening to Udoka. And I think at one point in that game, like late in the game in the fourth quarter, he talked about the foul trouble they were in. He's like, we got to take it to the basket. We can get to the line. Like, we got to take it to the basket. And they're like, got it, coach. Three, 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 three. And it's like,
hello.
Hello. Hello. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's so frustrating. Again, we'll talk to Brian Scalabrine at 3:30, get his thoughts on what he's been seeing from this team lately. But Andy Hart, WEI.com, he joins us next.
It's Bruins Thursday on WEI.
Coming up this afternoon at 4,
Nesson's Jack Edwards joins Marloni and Fourier. It's Bruins Thursday
on WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.